friends, some of our weekly correspondents. This comes from Wilmington, Delaware. It seems that if Father Henry Miller there on Sunday morning was instructing a group of school children on sacrifice, he talked for about half an hour, and then he said, "What is a sacrifice?" And one boy answered, "A sacrifice is when my mother makes me watch Bishop Sheen and I want to watch the Lone Ranger." So he sent the sacrifice of $1. And this comes from Carl Place, New York, from a Mrs. Jonan, who said that she took her little three-year-old daughter, Mary, to church for the first time. She wandered off investigating statues, and finally she came to a place where there were a number of candles before an altar, and she started blowing them out, and then she started to sing, "Happy birthday to you." And this comes from Atlanta, Georgia. And what is important about the letter is, of course, a reference to a birthday. It comes from Charles Jackson. But I must read you all of the letters so you'll get the full flavor of it. "I took a little TV survey of my own tonight, and I felt that I should let you know how it turned out. I called 10 persons here in Atlanta. Just by opening the telephone book and going down the list. Out of 10 I called, 7 were watching you, 3 were watching Romeo and Juliet, no one was watching I Love Lucy. On my 10th call, I asked a man who was watching Romeo and Juliet why he was not watching Bishop Sheen. His answer was, 'Well, it's getting near Lent, and I thought I'd give up something so it wouldn't become a habit.'" And Charles then says, "You were very popular down here in the Deep South. Well, now I better go. Homework calling. And as you say, God love you. Charles." Postscript: "Here is 25 cents for the poor you ate in Africa and Asia. I was going to buy a birthday card for my girlfriend. I hope you understand that this may be the ruination of my romance." So will you do me a favor on television? Say happy birthday to her, please. Her name is Cindy. Tell her it's from you know who. Happy birthday, Cindy. Then this other story. It seems that the Italian government wished the United States government to give them a radar outfit by which they could send down messages to the sea, get the proper reactions back, and locate a school of fish. Would be a great aid to the fishermen. Mrs. Luce, when she was our ambassador to Italy, was asked to get this radar outfit. And she told them this story. It seems that the French government received one of these radar outfits to locate fish. And when the French government sent down a message to the sea, a message came back from the school of fish. They were under the leadership of a giant whale and a tiny little herring. It seems that these two were inseparable, like the Damon and Pythias of the sea. Wherever the whale went, there went the herring. Messages always came back from both until this particular day When the French government sent down a message, only the herring answered. The French government was disturbed. It was getting to be a cabinet crisis. And they said to the herring, "What happened to the whale? Was the whale harpooned when they were taking a movie of Moby Dick? Did it bump its nose against an iceberg? Was it hit by a submarine? Where is the whale?" And the little herring answered, "Am I my blubber's kipper?" Now, after that, you ought to hear a few ideas on how to psychoanalyze yourself. Anybody who goes to a psychoanalyst ought to have his head examined. So let's examine ours. And we will try to determine what makes a person normal, and also what are the indications that one is becoming not so abnormal as to need a psychiatrist, because where there are serious cases of mental illness, these must be cared for by a psychiatrist. And psychiatry belongs in the domain of medicine, not in the domain of psychology. We're not concerned with those. Now, what is the difference between people who are normal and those who have a tendency to be abnormal? Well, the first difference is this. The normal person has a goal or a purpose in life. Those who are beginning to be abnormal and are losing peace of soul have no goal or purpose in life. First of all, the normal have a goal, just as you would not have a gadget in your house 10 minutes without asking, "What's it for?" So you ask the same thing about life. A house is made to live in, a church is a place of worship. So man must have a purpose. And the normal people decide on that before they decide on anything else. And the ultimate normal purpose of man is to be happy. Now, happy in that which constitutes his personality. What man wants, his final goal, is life. Not life for 5 more minutes, but just enduring life. Secondly, he wants truth. Not the truth of geography to the exclusion of science, but all truth. And thirdly, he wants love. Not a love for that has hate and satiety in it, but an enduring ecstatic love. This is the normal goal of human beings. And perfect life and perfect truth and perfect love is the definition of God. In other words, in seeking happiness is seeking God. Now, there's a principle in philosophy that the first in intention is the last in execution. Suppose you intend to go to Washington from New York. That's first in your intent. But it's the last place you get to, because you have to go through Newark and Philadelphia and Camden and Baltimore before you get to Washington. So too, a person has to decide, first of all, what is the ultimate goal of life? In fact, so important is this for people that whenever you sit down in a dentist's chair, before the dentist starts boring you, he has a right to ask you your philosophy of life. Because if your philosophy of life is wrong, he can't be sure that you will pay your bill. Apropos of a dentist, I heard Red Skelton say not very long ago, he told the story of a Texan who went to a dentist. And the dentist examined his teeth and said, "Your teeth are absolutely perfect." The Texan said, "Drill anyway, you may hit something." Now, the abnormal person is one who is without a purpose in life. The abnormal person has just a succession of petty little goals. He's very much like, for example, a farmer who might plant wheat 1 month and then tear up the wheat and plant corn, then tear up the corn and plant alfalfa. Or he's like a radio station that's tuned into two or three stations at the same time and getting only static. Minds that are tending to be abnormal are not fixed on any ultimate destiny. They read a book and they're a materialist 1 week and they're an idealist the next and the communist the next. They lay tracks down on Monday, tear them up and lay them in another direction Wednesday or Thursday. Very often they're like those of whom Confucius spoke. Confucius said that sometimes young men have no other goal than the flesh or sex. In middle age, it's power. And in old age, it's avarice. And Confucius, a very wise man, said that very often avarice and greed in old age is nothing but a sublimation of the lust of youth. But in any case, these people establish false infinites, misplaced infinites. They will, for example, try to make a god of the flesh. And by the intensity of an experience, try to make up for some ultimate goal or destiny. That produces an unhappiness of mind. Then we come to another distinction and difference. The normal person is governed by reason and will. The abnormal person is governed by instincts, impulses, and also he believes that the subconsciousness is the determinant of his life. Now let us take a reasonable human being. A reasonable human being is very much like a ship. Ship. You laugh at me before I get started. I know it's that bad, but I can't help it. Now, this is a pilot house, and this is the pilot, this is the engine room, these are waters, and so he has... That star looks as if it were out all night. If Dick Brown, the cartoonist, could only see my stars. Now, a pilot has a destiny. He knows where he's going to a port. He directs himself by stars. He communicates his ideas, and his orders, rather, down to the engine room. There is a disturbance from the outside by the waves, and sometimes the water will come in here, and then it'll be sent out again. But what is important is the fact that the pilot determines the direction of the ship. In other words, he's got a goal or a purpose. Now, man is like that, a normal man. First of all, he has a reason. He's interested in truth. He has a will. And when he sees a certain destiny or goal, or something that ought to be done, then he wills to do it. So that at the top of a reasonable man is his intellect and his will. Now these affect his emotions. For example, one receives sad news. One cries. It is not the crying that produces the idea of sad news. It is rather the idea that affected the emotions. The reason and will cannot always control the emotions directly, but can control the emotions indirectly by diverting thoughts in another direction. It is true that outside influences, the subconscious mind, the waters that get into the boiler, you're affected to a little degree. It is true that social, economic, parental background and influences do in some way affect man, but not seriously. And the combination of these constitute conscience. He has a fine sense of right and wrong. Now, that's the normal being. Now, the abnormal man is quite different from that. And I'm going to ask my little angel, since you laughed at my drawing, I'm going to ask my angel to draw the abnormal person. Oh, there he is already. This is my little angel. And here's the ship upside down. Now, this is a picture of the abnormal mind. Here is the subconsciousness, here. Here is reason and will, completely submerged. Here are the emotions. What is important for an abnormal person is the subconsciousness. We are determined to be what we are because of something that is buried down in the depths of the mind. This may be part of the heritage of the collective unconsciousness of the human race. So they say. Well, what role does reason play? Reason is only to justify. Find excuses very often for the way that one acts. What is the will? Is that important? No. The will is just an arena where the conflict takes place. So it is the subconsciousness in an abnormal person that completely determines his whole life. Reason and will, therefore, are unimportant. Hence, he's not concerned about objective things. For example, a star, a port. Those do not interest him. He's interested only in finding out what is here in the depths. And that's why he's so keen on analyzing, not thinking out reasons. Hence, he will, if he hears a fine piece of music, he's not so much interested in the music, but the way he feels when he hears the music. He watches the drama. He's not particularly interested in the unfolding of the plot. He's interested rather in the way that he feels when he sees the plot unfold. So, he would explain, for example, the fact that you cry when you eat an onion, get near an onion, is because you once were eating an onion and received news that you were disinherited, and you've cried ever since whenever you had an onion. The objective world and reasons are not the determinant, according to the abnormal. Hence, they're not concerned when they find a man who believes in God about his reasons. They do not ask him for evidence. They try to find some queer reason why he ever says he believes in God. Someone has said that a psychoanalyst is one when a very pretty woman enters a room, looks at everybody else. You heard the story, didn't you, of the two psychoanalysts who passed one another in the street? One said to the other, "Good morning," and the other said, "I wonder what he meant by that." And so, they live in a world not of reasons, but they live in a world of dreams. And all dreams have a tremendous meaning. And they are, for the most part, unfulfilled sex desires. Ah, if you only knew the depth of the dream world. Here's a story that I think explodes all this exaggerated belief in the subconsciousness of the determinate of rational beings. This individual came to a psychoanalyst, was stretched out on a couch. He took his medicine laying down. He said, "What did you dream about?" He said, "I dreamt that I was out rowing. And there came over me a great desire for chocolate, and before I knew it, there were on my lap two Hershey bars." Psychoanalyst said, "Identical Hershey bars?" "Yes." "Do you know any people who are identical?" "Yes," he said, "there are some twins that pass my house every day." "Identical twins? Ages about 22, 23. How are they dressed?" "Brown." "Wear any jewelry?" "Yes. A little silver on the brow." "Well, can't you see that that's just a repressed desire, libido, for the twins? Come back and see me in 2 weeks." So he came back again, stretched out on the couch. The psychoanalyst said, "What did you dream about?" He said, "I dreamt about the twins. And if you tell me that has anything to do with two Hershey bars, I walk out." And the third difference is that the normal person believes in repressing the excesses of the lower instincts in order to express his reason and his will and his potential for divine grace. So there is a repression, to be true. There is also a repression for the abnormal. But the repression here is not of the lower instincts. It's rather the repression of the reason and the will in order to give an outlet for the lower instincts. There's no such thing as there being only repression in life. There's never a repression without an expression. Never an expression without a repression. For example, an alcoholic man represses his love of alcohol. He's expressing, for the moment, a consideration for his wife. If he represses a consideration and love for his wife, he's expressing his alcoholism. You never have one without the other. Here's the repression of what is base and low. And not because any passions or instincts are wrong. None of them are wrong of and by themselves. It's only the excesses of them that are wrong. And one does it why? One does it on account of love. There's something one loves more. One loves the nobler, so one sacrifices that which is lower. And here, on the contrary, there is a repression of reason. Moral law, very often, in order to express the lower instincts. And the argument that such an abnormal person will give is, well, it's natural, isn't it? Shouldn't one follow one's nature? Certainly one should. But what is our nature? Our nature is not that of a goat or a pig. Our nature is rational. We're human beings, governed not by the subconscious mind, governed by a reason and governed by a will. It is false to say that we can always cure a psychological complex by a physiological outlet. One might just as well say the way to overcome a complex about committing suicide is to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge. It's wrong also for people to think that we are to get rid of conflicts of life. There are certain conflicts that are inevitable in human nature, simply because we're composed of body and soul, and matter and spirit. And therefore, there's always a struggle. There's a cross that's at the very center of human life. No man is ever really happy on the inside until he's at war with himself. At war with that which is base, and which would destroy his Godward tendencies. As our Lord said, I came not to bring peace, but the sword. Not the sword that points and thrusts outward to destroy the neighbor, but the sword that thrusts inward in order to destroy one's egotism and one's lust and one's avarice and all the things that destroy also a peace of mind. The greatest cross in the world is to be without a cross. And love makes peace. By now, and God love you.